Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming out with another episode of Inside Curling. I was just saying to Kevin and Warren, I said, Warren, I want to be a sixth on a curling team. He said, no, Jim, more like a 12th. Good morning, boys. Yes, we bring you another show. Post-Women's Worlds. Thanks for joining us. We're going to talk all about that and many other things. I want to fully recognize our two Hall of Famers, Kevin Martin and Warren Hansen, who are here each and every week. And, of course, our sponsor, Sports Interaction, who brings you what is happening around the curling world. Nestle Boost, the sponsor of Mailbag and Coyote Tractor, brings you Hot Rock Topics. And Goldline brings you In the House, and we have a guest. I think you should know them if you watch curling this week. Silvana Taranzoni and Alina Petz. Four in a row, Kev. Four in a row. You must wake up each morning and going, which records of mine fell? What record of mine fell again? Okay. Mailbag, we got one from Greg who's interested in talking about some sweeping that Kevin will answer. What's happening around the curling world? Of course, the women's world. We'll get Kevin's take on that. You were there all week, Kev, or more than a week. It's always 10 days. The Canadian mixed doubles wrapped up in Sudbury. We'll take a review of that. The Canadian wheelchair championships wrapped up on the weekend in Moose Jaw. And we'll give you the outcome of that. Also, the Canadian Juniors U21 is underway in Rouyn-Noranda. And the World's Men's Championship will get underway in Ottawa. Kevin, you're just home for, man, a couple of days. And we'll try and figure out your schedule. This must be your wife's idea, Kev. She's like, I don't know, go to work, Kev. You know, there's a bunch of stuff you can leave the house. Hot Rock Topics. We completed the Women's World this weekend in Sweden and the Canadian Mixed Doubles in Sudbury. The women's worlds involving Canada were shown on linear television, while the Canadian mixed doubles was video streamed by Curling Canada. A lot of fans upset with a lot of this. So we're going to take a look at what's happening with the broadcasting. In the House is brought to you by Goldline Curling. Goldline Curling's Momentum Rush shoes are the fastest, most stable, and most comfortable shoes Goldline has ever made. You want to find out more about it, go to goldlinecurling.com. We've got Team Switzerland on joining us this morning, the world champions, four-time world champions. Silvana Taranzoni is with us, and so is Alina Petz. Congratulations. Well done. How are you feeling?
Oh, I feel happy, tired, though. It was a very long week, but, no complaints. It's amazing, I think, what we achieved, and I don't mind to be a little tired right now.
You're setting a record. You've won four in a row. That not only will this go down in the history books with curling, but maybe in all of sports, you know, to win the world championships four times. I know, Elena, you've won this. I think you've been on six teams that have won this. Such a huge thing. Talk to us about what happens back in your hometown. First of all, where do you live in Switzerland, Silvana?
I live downtown Zurich, which I love.
Have they celebrated it yet with you guys, your country?
No, there were a few people at the airport, but curling is not as popular like in Canada, unfortunately. So it made the headlines, though. I think we made a lot of newspapers, so that's good.
I'll tell you what, Swiss curling is very popular in Canada. Okay, you keep beating us. We were talking to Elena just before we started here, back and forth about what you guys are going to do. You're going to eventually make it to the next slam. And she told me, you guys, with all the curling you've done, with winning the world, practicing, that you're going to go to Ottawa to watch more curling. Okay. Why the heck are you doing that? Take a break. You guys are going to go to watch the men's?
Well, that is kind of a break for me, at least. I mean, I'm just there as a fan, so I don't have to throw any rocks, and I'm super happy about that.
How about you, Silvana? You're going as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to go for a few days too, yeah. I love to watch curling, and seems like I never get tired of the sport.
Let's talk about how you got into the game, go a little behind the scenes, and then we'll bring in Kevin and Warren. Where did it all start for you, Silvana? And was it always going to be curling? How long have you been doing it? Mentors, influences, all that sort of jazz from when you started to where you are today as a world champion?
Well, I started when I was 10. My dad was already a curler, so he took me on the ice, on Sundays. And then there was this camp for kids, so I wanted to go, and I fell in love right away with the sport. And yeah, and then I had a lot of coaches along the way, you know, and they all inspired me in a different way. And the guy who had the most influence was the mental coach we had, like, or still have, like, Ralf Schoenfeld. He taught me it's not only important to practice hard, but also smart. And I think that was a very, very good advice.
Kevin?
Obviously, I'd like to hear how you got into the game as well, because you guys, you for the last few years, have owned women's curling. And to get that good, I guess, how did it start for you, and how did it get going, and how did you get so good?
Well, I started when I was 6 years old, so 27 years ago already. So my brother is 3 years older, and he got into curling because of my parents. Back then, I always wanted to do what he does. So that's why I started curling, basically. I found the love of the game when I was like 15. I wanted to stop when I was 14. I actually was a really bad junior curler. So I improved a couple of years later when I got into a really good junior team. Then I played with Miriam Ott and the team. And I think that was a key moment in my career. I mean, they won everything, and I could be part of that and saw how they're working. Yeah, it turned out that was a really good thing for me in my career.
I want to talk a little bit about, before I let Warren in here, about your team, because it's changed. And to be honest with you, I didn't think you guys would win this time because of the new team.
That's up there with the Gushu one.
You know, how in the heck would you ever get two new players on the team and play at the highest level in the world? I would love to hear your thoughts on Briar and Carol. I didn't think it would be possible to, I guess I shouldn't say replace, but to have somebody come in and be able to fill the shoes of Esther at second. I'd like to talk about Carol first. She was incredible at this Worlds. And I guess your thoughts on her play, first of all.
She did a great job. Like you said, she was wonderful, and she worked a lot for that. She's like a really hard worker. She's going on the ice every day and like throws so many rocks, and she improved a lot, not only technically, also like understanding the game. She's like such a nice person, the motivator in the team, I would say. So she's the one which is always positive, even when we are down. And yeah, I'm actually impressed about how she played at this World. I mean, I didn't know if she can handle like all the pressure. I mean, in Switzerland, all the media are like telling them we have a new team. Can they be world champion again? So what's going to happen? And yeah, she did a great job with handling that.
Has she always been that good of a hitter? There were comments galore about her ability to make double and triple peels and throw the rock really hard. But I did not know that before this year. Did that come out of training with you guys, with you and Sylvana? Like, how did it happen?
I think she's always been a good hitter, but she improved a lot, and she worked on that skill like a lot, especially the last couple months. So, and I'm so happy for you it worked out, because she was working super hard. Yeah.
Sylvana, one thing that was brought up quite a lot on the television coverage was Briar's powerful sweeping. She's not a big person. She doesn't weigh a lot, but the angle of her brush and her entire body weight is way up high. She's on the balls of her feet and getting every ounce on top of the broom. Because we made comments early in the year that was sort of maybe something that was going to hold you guys back, but that was clearly not the case at this Worlds. So what training has been done, I guess, for Briar to become so strong, both physically, but then as a sweeper?
Yeah, I agree. Like Briar has always been a good sweeper. We knew that, and that was also part of our decision to ask her to come to our team, because sweeping is such an important factor. You know, we study how to sweep the best, actually, and we don't know if we do everything right. You know, as you could have seen, we don't do this knifing like what every other team does. We don't quite believe in that, maybe. So maybe the weight is not the only important thing. It's also technique, and she does that very well.
Congratulations again to both of you. What a fabulous accomplishment to win 4 world championships in a row. I want to go back to the final game with Norway and to the 8th end, which I believe was crucial with what happened here as far as winning it was concerned. So we're down to skip stones. You don't have the hammer. You're up 1 without it, I believe, up 3-2. Norway has got two rocks, one on the one side of the 12-foot, one on the other side of the 12-foot, and there's two staggered guards fairly short in front. I'm watching what you're talking about, and it was fairly obvious to me, I think, that Silvana wanted to hit the rock that was in the one of the ones in the open and sit for shot rock and probably end up resulting in Norway getting two. But Alina wanted to take another approach, and that was to draw around those two staggered guards into the 4-foot, had to be in front of the tee line, had to be dead behind those guards, because if it wasn't, you could potentially give up three. And so it was really the turning point of the game. If you could make that shot perfectly, you'd have a chance to hold them to one. And I watched your body language and your expressions. Silvana, I think you wanted to hit the open one, but Alina wanted to go around the front. Alina, tell us what your thought process was, and it's a great teaching moment. This was the point, I thought, that determined who won that game.
As soon as she rolled out that far to the 12-foot, there was no other choice to draw around. I mean, it was the only way to avoid those the deuce. And it was actually not that Silvana, in my point of view, that she wanted to hit the open one. She was telling me, you can hit the open one, or you can draw. And for me, it was the draw for sure. So we were more discussing, do we play the draw with my first one or with my second one?
Also, the way those two rocks were positioned, there was no run back if you got around there either, because they were staggered. To me, that was a turning point in the game. Silvana, let's talk about the ice conditions there the entire week. We heard a lot in Canadian television that there were issues, there were problems, yet Alina's curling over 90% every game. What was really going on with rocks and ice there? Were you guys comfortable with it, or what do you think the issues were, or were there any?
We really liked the ice, to be honest. I've been on bad ice for many competitions, actually, also in Canada, and this was far from being bad ice. I have to say that. And there were some tricky spots out there, but I think we have to see them, we have to adjust to them, and I think it were fair conditions. I can't say anything more than that.
What about stones? Alina, were you comfortable with the rocks the entire time? I know they've retextured the stones partway through, but was that all okay from your point of view? Everything felt good?
Well, I always get the good rocks, right? So so I don't really have any bad rocks.
But
I know Breyer had to throw some rocks that were maybe a little different. So stone matching was really important, to be honest. In general, there were maybe one or two bad rocks, but the rest was really good. So we for the final or for the semifinal, we had a lot of choices stone-wise.
I'd love to ask you about the sanding of the stones halfway through the event. I've been curled for a few years now, and they were starting to do it just at the end of my career. I'd love to hear your thoughts, both of you, but Silvana first. Because it changes everything, at least to a certain degree. Your thoughts on, the championships on the Wednesday or the Thursday midweek, re-sanding the stones?
Well, I think you have to do that for the ice maker to have consistent conditions. They cannot clip more at one point, so they have to redo the rocks to maintain the same or almost the same conditions. So I'm not an ice maker, but from what I heard, that's also what the ice maker prefer. Sometimes they even do it twice, in a competition. I think once per competition, it's absolutely necessary.
So do you worry, Alina, at all about trying to get the pair that you need? Like you said, I always get the best two, but right after sanding, you don't really know anymore. You just leave that to the coaches, or what do you do? How do you feel comfortable?
I'm not worried about it. I mean, first of all, I trust our coaches. They proved that they did a good job. But I think we always have the chance to test the rocks again in the pregame practice. So we play a lot of draws there. And if there is something significant, we see that. Or as a player, I think you should be able to feel that. So I'm not worried at all. And even if there is a bad rock I can give it to Breyer and I can be sure she can handle it.
I've got a few questions for you, Silvana. People are going to wake up the day after you guys won the Worlds, and every curling team is going to go, get Team Switzerland on the line here. We want to figure out what they're doing. How much curling do you do? We've had on Brad and all the other great curlers in the world, talked about how much they practice, et cetera. Some do a lot, some don't. How about you guys, Silvana? How do you spend your time?
Well, we practice every day. I mean, there are exceptions, of course, but we practice every day, sometimes twice a day. If you want to be the best in the world, that's what you have to do.
What would you tell kids who are starting out in curling? You started when you were 10 years old, right to a world champion four times. What would you tell them if they were getting into curling? And would you have done anything different? I hope not, but maybe would you have done anything different when you started out curling to where you are now?
I mean, it was a long journey, but probably, you know, that journey also made me to what I am right now. But I think there will be a lot of shortcuts out there for the young curlers, you know, and I think they don't have enough coaches. Actually, in Switzerland, there are not enough coaches. And I would like to teach them more so they can make those shortcuts I was not able to take. So, you know, at the end, I would just tell them a lot of strategy. I think they are lacking a lot of knowledge about how to play the game. And then they have to find the love for the game. That's the most important thing. I think technically everyone is able to, you know, to throw a rock properly, but the strategy is something I feel like the young curlers don't get enough teaching.
So you've got four world championships in a row. The Olympics is 2 years away. I'm sure that's the one thing that you want to add to the trophy cabinet is an Olympic medal. It's going to be just down the road from you in Italy. And I would imagine that's your focus. How will the representative for Switzerland be determined for the 2026 Olympics?
We don't know yet.
I'd go with someone who won four world championships. That's what I'd do.
No, we don't know yet. No.
So what is it likely to be? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think they learned a little bit from the last year. So I think like they are more tending to select, to make an election instead of trials. But I'm not sure, honestly. I don't know.
So last time you did a trials, is that correct?
Well, we qualified through the worlds, but the man had to play trials. And I think as soon as you have to play trials in the same season, it's really, really tough to be very good at the Olympics. So I think they are reconsidering doing that.
Okay, so how many other teams would there be considered for this thing? I'm assuming you're way at top of the rung, but how many other teams would be maybe in the running?
Yeah, I think it depends how successful other teams are at Europeans or World Championships. We always have to qualify for that. I think if there is no other team that's going to be at the World Championship or European, then it's easy. But, you know, there are potential of 3-4 teams, I think.
Okay, so you're hoping there's going to be a selection, I would imagine.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
I'm picking you. Yeah, I'm picking you guys. Yeah. Before we let you go, I'd like to find out what you guys do. I know we were talking to Elena before you came on about what she does when she's not curling, keeping two jobs. I'm trying to figure out what do you guys do to relax if there's any time? Do you watch, you know, Savannah, do you watch Netflix? What do you like to do for fun?
Well, I started to play golf, and in Switzerland, usually you can do that even in the winter. So that's how I try to get a fresh mind. And besides that, I like to read a book once in a while and, you know, so meet friends. That's just a normal life.
What's the last book you read?
Yeah, it's actually in German, so I don't know how to translate that. Yeah.
I'll brush up on my German. How about you, Elena? What do you like to do to have fun and relax?
Well, I'm a very social person, so I like to spend my time with friends and family. In summer, I go hiking with them, so just the more people, the better.
Oh, cool. Well, listen, thanks a lot, you guys, for coming on. We really do appreciate it. Congratulations again. There looks like there's no stopping you guys, no slowing you down, and enjoy the men's, and good luck the rest of the season. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, guys. We'll see you in Ottawa.
Listen to the Inside Curling Podcast ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. And they're gone. They're done. They're gone. They're on their way to Ottawa to watch the men's worlds. Kev, be honest. If you won a worlds, you went through the briar, you won the worlds, Okay, the last thing you're doing is going to go the next week to watch curling, isn't it?
It's the absolute last thing. It's amazing, you know, to want to go and watch curling. But they're going to have fun there. They're going to have a blast. It sounds like Ottawa is going to be fantastic for the men's worlds, and good on them. But boy, have they set the bar high for any team to follow in the future.
She talked about, Kevin, you know, with the young kids, what you would tell them. And she said that, you know, they need more coaching. There were a couple of shortcuts that kids get to do now that she didn't. And one was strategy. It sounded to me like the big one that she was leaning on. When you watched them, Kev, they went 14-0. They wiped everybody out. Did you notice that, Kevin, with them, that it's, you know, not just skill, but a bunch more strategy?
That's something that Sylvana's been great at for a very long time. Like, she studies the game. And for her, when she goes to Ottawa, she'll be studying again at the men's worlds. And it just never stops for her. Like, she just wants to get better and smarter. And she is that way. Now, throwing the last ones, I don't think she really enjoyed that. But she was the smartest skip for a long, long time. She's been fantastic. To then have to partner up with Alina Petz, who's such a good last rock thrower and has cold ice water going through her veins, nothing bothers her. For those two to pair up and have Sylvana call the game and Alina throw the last ones, that's quite the pair. I think that's what their success is kind of based on, is that Sylvana's smarts, and because she studies the game. So her advice to kids is just study, study, study. But, you know, how many people want to study like her? Like, she studies all the time. You know, you got to be super dedicated. But look, four worlds in a row. So how do you argue it? Put in the time. And she's done that. And that's what she says. Maybe there's shortcuts. I don't think there's shortcuts. Sorry, kids. I don't think there's shortcuts. You have to study hard on the game and you have to practice like crazy. You heard they practice every day, sometimes twice a day. That's how you get good. It's not easy, but look what it, when you do that, how much time you put in. Look at the fun they're having all over the world and winning at a world level at a continuous pace. So it's pretty special.
When I listen back, I can't help but think you can kind of plain wood on their biorhythm, Warren. They're pretty low reactors, like pretty, you know, short answers, pretty steady, not too much, you know, very humble. In what they did, you forget, like when I was talking to them, you forget you're looking at a four in a row world champion. They're no Ben Hebert, I'll say that, you know. do you get a sense that, you know, Kevin talked about ice water through the veins. I get a sense that these guys are like steady Eddie, no matter what the prize is.
They're very calm and confident, I think, is the key thing. And you watch Alina Petz, you watch her body language, which I'm always watching players for their body language and their facial expressions. And there's so much confidence just seeping out of her veins. And you can hear and you can see, we don't understand the language, but you can just tell by what she's saying that she's completely calm, completely in control. And what a fabulous touch she has. Man, she can come back, and in most games you watch her, she hits the tee line anytime she pretty much wants to. She's got good mechanics, a great delivery, great release of the stone, very consistent, and she's going to be a contender, I think, for a long time to come if she chooses to be.
Good stuff. Okay, it's time for Mailbag now, brought to you by Nestle Boost. Complete nutrition to fuel your day. Greg writes us, "Hey guys, my name is Greg, and this year I'm playing on a U18 team in Peterborough, Ontario. I was watching the Scotties in the first few games of the Brier, and I noticed teams were sweeping the rocks differently when it comes to directional sweeping. So it got me wondering, what is the most effective way to direct rocks?" Apologies if I get the terms wrong. Don't worry about that, Greg. They're dealing with me. I get terms wrong all the time. My understanding is that carving will make the rock carry more while directing the rock, which is great if the rock is light and offline. And knifing will make the rock curl more, and it won't affect the weight as much because you're heating the ice in a much thinner line, thus being more effective for takeouts and draws. Hopefully you guys can correct my understanding of these techniques. By the way, I love the podcast. That's from Greg. So directional sweeping, carving, knifing. Kev, what's poor Greg at 18? He's got to take all this in. He may be trying a little much for a new curler.
Well, you know, well, thank you, first of all, Greg, but isn't it funny? The vocabulary in curling used to be different. Well, now it's way different. You got carving and knifing and this and that, and oh my goodness, and directional sweeping. Anyway, okay. So first of all, talking to Bobby Lammy not too long ago, and really none of this is proven to be completely accurate yet, but there is a ton of testing being done. So it's getting closer to being, I guess, as a group, decided that it works the way they think. But let's start with carving. So that's with the broom at a T. So you're carving a broom, carving the rock with your broom at, so you're going to be basically sweeping the line that you want the rock to follow. That's the angle. That's the angle next to, tangent to the line of delivery or the rock's target path. Now that's to curl or to not curl. So you're around 60 degrees. Some people get right in behind the rock. The problem with that is you're blocking the view of your thrower. So maybe being just off the path is best with your body, and therefore that'll adjust the line slightly. But around 60 degrees, that's about right for carving. And the thought is, yes, you can carry the rock some with that and adjust the line. Now you have to have a lot of downward pressure, and the carving stroke needs to be fairly long. Like the carry stroke is a short stroke. But when you're carving, you need to have a good strong core and have that broom go a long ways out to carve the stone. Now, what is happening with some of the bigger sweepers, both Carrick and Brad Thiessen broke brooms this year, because when with that long stroke, all of a sudden, instead of being a straight up and down angle, when you extend your arms out, now that broom head's a lot further from you, and there's more pressure on the handle of the broom, and they're busting around 6 inches up from the head. So you got to be a little bit careful. I don't know, you know, how big you are. Carrick and Brad, I don't know, Carrick weighs about 230 or 235 or something, and Brad's 240, 245, something like that. So these guys, they're big guys, but with that long stroke for carving, it's becoming a little bit dangerous if you weigh a lot. So there is some work being done by various curling companies to strengthen that shaft again, because it's just so much torque on it. Okay, so that's carving, be it making the rock curl or making the rock stay straight. And now when we talk about knifing, let's talk about the way we can get these rocks going without carrying them. That's kind of the concern sometimes. When you're going to sweep, the rock has enough weight, right? But you need it to curl. So they believe that knifing, that's with the broom going straight, not on a tee, will help the rock curl, but will not have it maintain its momentum, which is what sweeping does. So they believe you can make it stay straight or curl without continuing its path. So it's not 100% proven yet, but more and more teams are doing it, which kind of leads you to believe that there would be some accuracy in it. Does that all make sense, Jimmy?
That's perfectly clear. To me, I got it. Yep. No, the brush is perpendicular, or the brush is straight up and down the line. I get that.
Yep.
Who started it, Kev? Who, and you've probably around long enough to understand when someone came up with that. I got an idea. Let's knife it.
Oh, no, well, the knifing part, I don't know who came up with the whole concept with Brad Guju's team, during the summer. And, he figured this out. And they won, I don't know how many games in a row, a ton of games in a row the next fall. That was without the WCF fabric. So then they could really make the rocks go crazy. And then everybody started to learn more and more. As far as the knifing goes, that was tested a little bit early. I know this Hammy and Lammy out of Scotland certainly did it early, but others did as well. And right. Then it's just now becoming more mainstream. And we'll see. Will it continue? It's going to continue to evolve. This has only been a few years. Sweeping's right. Been around a really long time. So this is not the end of the story when it comes to sweeping, that's for sure.
Warren, you were not around when they had brushes. Could you knife a rock with a straw broom?
Could be a little difficult, Jim. But, I mean, the same principles that they're using with carving were attempted with corn brooms a long time ago, and more or less when the rock was losing momentum, it was thought that you could impact it to some degree. But the idea has been around forever, but to really do it effectively, it's got to be a brush. You couldn't do it with a corn broom.
Okay, there we go. Good lesson in sweeping. So we got to get new handles, Kev. They're going to have to go to a graphite or something.
You know what? There is some work being done with various types of metal right now, actually. To figure out what to do, because it's you can get really badly hurt when you fall on top of the rock. You know, you can bust ribs and you can bust your face and all kinds of things. So it's not a joke. It's something that needs to be looked at, because these guys are getting and females are getting so strong to get all their body weight on top of that broom handle, and when you go a long ways out, you're in a vulnerable situation. If that broom breaks, you fall right on the stone.
when they audition sweepers, they're going to say, okay, let's see how much you can bench press.
And how tall.
Right.
Height matters. Height matters because of leverage. So, yeah, you want to come out of volleyball into curling.
Interesting stuff, man. What's happening around the curling world brought to you by Sports Interaction. You want to bet? You can do it at Sports Interaction. Get in on the action and make a play at Sports Interaction. You got to be 19 years old or older to play, and Ontario only. And please play responsibly. Here we go. The Women's World ended last Sunday in Sandviken, Sweden. And Switzerland, as we said at the top of the show, won. Silvana Terenzoni won her fourth consecutive world title with a perfect 14-0. I remember the days when we used to say that about Canada. Those days seem to be behind us. Kevin, you were there for the event. You worked television the whole 10 days. Give us your take. Give us a wrap on the whole thing.
Well, yeah, I'd love to give a wrap. It was really well organized, to be honest. It went really well. Switzerland, just too good. Just too good right now. Alina Petz is kind of she's so much better than everybody else in the women's game right now. It'd be fun to be on her team because you just grab onto Alina, right. Let her shoot her, her 90% or whatever it was. The Italian lead had the highest percentage of the week. Another lead, at any rate, had the second highest average. Alina had the third highest average of all curlers. Well, skips never have the highest average. That's impossible because the shots are so hard.
Right.
Like it's just not the way it is, but that's what it was. And she's only 1% back of the highest average. So it's just crazy stuff what Alina's doing. Another, you know, a country that did extremely well, Kristin Skazli and Norway, who lost the final. That's who beat Canada in the semi. That's an impressive finish because, she plays mixed doubles with her husband. But for the most part, that team doesn't travel all over the world. They're not professional curlers. So quite an impressive finish for Norway. And of course, you know, great bronze game. You've got, of course, Sweden, the home team, Anna Hasselborg taking on Canada. Well, what a great game. And Canada came out of that on top. So congratulations to Canada, of course, and Carrie Anderson and company for another good week, another good world championship. I know they would love to have won that semi and got into that gold game against Switzerland. But you know what? They did great. So all in all, I think it was really good. They had some ice issues early in the week. The building, for a lot of people that you know didn't listen to our world curling broadcasts, it was like a cavernous, big building played in this other sport called bandy. Mm-hmm. And it's an ice sport, kind of like hockey, but it's the size of a soccer field inside. So this building was massive. Like when you watch a hockey rink, the curling sheets go lengthwise, right? Mm-hmm. Well, not here. They went across the building because it's such a great big field. You go across.
Oh, wow.
So we only used the one little end of this monstrous building.
Right.
The rest was for the bar and they had two sheets of curling ice on the other side of this curtainy wall for kids to try. And I think they had 1,400 kids come through trying curling. So, you know, when you look at all of that, it was really, really well done in a community that was about 28,000 people. In northern Sweden. Really good.
Warren, you've always said, you know, we got to make sure we send the best teams when we go to these big events, in this case, the Worlds. I believe the best team was there in Anderson. Is it finally, Warren, okay, we are the best team that we're sending, but we're just not the best anymore, and that's okay? Or what do you say to that, Warren?
Well, I guess the world has changed dramatically, and I think that was one of the tightest women's worlds that's ever existed. 13 teams, and the only one team that was maybe an automatic W was New Zealand, but their skip wasn't part of the team, so that impacted them as well. But the other 12, pretty much anybody could beat anybody at any time, so it was really tight, except for that one team with that outstanding person throwing fourth rocks called Alina Petz, and what a record she has established. With that win, that was her sixth Women's Worlds. One was as an alternate player, but her sixth Worlds. Four in a row. The second on the team, Carol Howard, also won her sixth Women's World. So quite a record for Petz and Howard. Take a look at some of Petz's records with regard to the Women's World. 6 appearances, 6 gold medals. Overall record, 70 wins, 12 losses. Playoff record, 11-0. Last 3 World Championships record, 41-1. So she's established a mark that's going to be very, very hard to equal. So what an outstanding player. Team Canada, they struggle at times, but I think they can be pretty proud of their bronze medal. In that crowd, when you take a look at the people who weren't on the medal podium, Sweden, Japan, Italy, and Korea didn't medal. So I think Canada should be quite pleased the fact that they were in that final three and that they got the bronze.
Very good. Like I said, Kevin, you must hate waking up each morning and go, oh, another one of my records fell.
But, Alina owns the book.
Yeah, she's got it.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one to match.
The Canadian mixed doubles concluded in Sudbury, and give us an update there.
Well, I think Kevin was on an airplane between Sandviken and Edmonton when all this happened, so I don't think he saw much of it. But I thought, watch the final. It was a pretty well-played game between Jennifer Jones and her life partner, Brent Lang, against another couple, Brent Gallant and Jocelyn Peterman, who actually were two-time Canadian mixed doubles champions before this event. Final was well played. Jennifer Jones made a great come-around tap back to score one in a 6-5 win, and they went undefeated in the competition. In the semis, Jones and Lang defeated another solid twosome. A couple of names we've heard of before, Rachel Holman and Tyler Tardy, and the Peterman-Gallant squeezed by Brittany Tran and Aaron Selinsky from Airdrie, Alberta. So listen to this as well. Here's another bunch of records. So the win for Jones and Lang adds to their combined trophy cabinet. It already had 12 Canadian championships, 7 world titles, and an Olympic gold medal in it.
Wow.
Quite a record. They'll go on to play in the World Mixed Doubles Championship in Ganyang, Korea, April 22nd to 29th. This is the same facility that they used for the Olympics in 2018. Brent was there playing second for Kevin Cooey, so he will be more than familiar with the venue. There'll be 20 teams playing in two pools, and probably 6 teams qualify, I believe. Interesting with this event, and Kevin and I talked about this, I wasn't aware of the fact that there was money involved, but there was a fair chunk of change being played for in Sudbury. Jones and Lang received $40,000. Peterman Gallant were paid $20,000 in the third place team. Tran Selinsky received a check for $12,500. So we'll talk more about this event in the balance of the show. But Kevin, you're going to Korea. What do you think of all this?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, actually. It's going to be tough again. The world is so good at mixed doubles, and not all traditional curling countries. So it's going to be a tough grind. But it's a beautiful place. I spent a month there at the 2018 Olympics, and we're staying pretty much at the same place as what we were then. So looking forward to it. And it's only about 5 minutes from the hotels to the rink, so that's really handy. The building, well, last time it had great ice, so I expect the ice to be fantastic for mixed doubles, which is really important because you don't have the ability to have all four people in right. as many sweepers, so it's really important that the ice be good, and I think it will. So you're going to have a fantastic championship. Obviously, the athletes from far away, there's far away coming from all over the place. Time change is an issue. So they're going to have to get in there quite a few days early to beat jet lag and the time change. So it'll be interesting to watch the first couple, 3 days, how many teams get in there in time and aren't real groggy. I think that's a factor when you go so far away. But Jennifer and Brent, they've been around a long time. They know what to do. But it's going to be a tough field, very difficult to make the podium.
Kev, you're traveling the globe right now. You're going to be there. So now Sweden, Korea. And other places. Is there any COVID protocols, Kev, that they're warning about when you go over to Korea?
I don't know about that yet. I haven't read anything on the trip to Korea. Nothing on the trip to Sweden.
Okay.
And then it's just Ottawa, Toronto, you know, Canada destinations.
Good.
And so with South Korea, I don't think so, but we'll see. We'll see in the next couple of weeks when we get all that travel figured out. I haven't even looked at it, Jim, yet. I just got home from the last thing.
Quick nap, and you're on your way. Congratulations, Jennifer and Langer. Way to go. Warren, you got to keep going. What happened at the wheelchair championships in Moose Jaw?
Well, I'm just a bundle of information, aren't I, Jim?
Yeah, you really are. Yeah.
Canadian Wheelchair Championship was played in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan this past weekend, and the home team province... Our home province team won the competition. They defeated Douglas Dean of Northern Ontario 6-2 in the final. So congratulations to lead Moose Gibson, second Darwin Bender, third Marie Wright, and the skip Gilbert Dash.
Moose.
There you go.
Yeah, a moose.
Love it.
Must be a relative of Ray Turnbull.
Yes, I was just thinking. That's a great curling name. Yeah, the late, great Ray Turnbull was always called the moose. So that's great. Awesome. Nice. Congratulations.
Handle. And the cheer, the string through the can for Northern Ontario. Yeah. I've told many stories about the patch, and if someone said, what's your most annoying thing? It would be that call, that coffee can with the string coming through. Especially when they had a few pops, these guys, they wouldn't stop. Very good, Warren. You're not done yet. The Canadian Juniors, U21, got underway in the Rouyn-Noranda. What's the update there?
In Quebec, so that's well underway. Find it interesting they're calling it the U21, but for Canada now, because they're setting them a year later, it's actually the U20. And I believe this is the last year they can have one player on the team who would actually age out if they went to the Worlds. But the Canadian event's more becoming the U20. Anyway, it's a total of 18 men's teams, 18 women's teams. Some provinces have two entries. None of it does not have either a men's or women's team in it, and the Yukon has only a women's team. 18 on each side. The winners will be determined next weekend. Remember the World Juniors last February, where Canada did not virtually win enough games to qualify in either the men's or women's for the A side of the 2024 World Juniors. So the two teams that win in Rouyn-Noranda are going to have to go to the World Junior B Championship first in December of next year, and they're going to have to finish in the top four there to get a spot in the actual World Juniors A division. It'll take place in February, site yet to be determined. So the two teams that do win this year are going to have their work cut out for them, and we'll bring you updates on that next weekend once we know who the finalists are and the winners.
Am I okay, Warren, if I turn 22 between the one I won in and the Worlds?
No. The cutoff date is June 1st, so if you turn 21 after the 1st of June, I believe, is a cutoff date, then you're not eligible. Sorry, Jim.
Darn it. I only missed by 40 years. Tell me this, Warren. Do you know, are they all funded? Like, if you go to a national championships, does Curling Canada pay for a bunch of it or to get your team there? How's it work?
The juniors, yes, they certainly do. The juniors pretty much have their transportation and their accommodations covered. Other than that, they're pretty much on their own. Often it's the provincial association that'll help them in that regard with food, right, and things of that nature, but their basic expenses are covered, yes.
Good. Kev, on your way to Ottawa, the World's Men's is coming up. It starts on Saturday. Warren sent me a note. He said, get the breakdown from Kevin, leaving out Brad Gushue, okay? Or Gushue.
Yeah. Well, you're going to bet against him again, Jimmy?
Yeah, no, I'm not. Yeah. I left him out last time. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, yeah, Brad appreciated that. Yeah. Well, it's a great field. I don't think, to be honest, to be totally honest, I don't think the men's field is as deep as women's. Women's across the world is phenomenal right now. Women's curling could be one of the best sports on the planet for many, many nations that could win. Who do we have? Okay, I won't count Brad, but Brad, of course. Joel Retornaz, what a great team out of Italy. You've got to look at those guys as being close to getting on the podium. Bruce Mowat, Scotland, of course. Nicodine, definitely. John Schuster, you got to look at him. Magnus Ramsfell out of Norway. I think it's a stretch to see them getting on the podium, but to make the playoffs, I think that's a reasonable assumption. Some of the teams that are I think, pretty good and they're going to win some games. Lucas Klima out of the Czech Republic. Sixten Totzek is really good out of Germany, and they're going to win some games as well. And that's the thing with this field. Some of the teams probably won't make the playoffs, but they're going to beat some of the best teams because they're good at themselves. Riko Yanagisawa out of Japan is also really, really strong. Byung-jin out of South Korea. These are all really good teams. Anton Hood out of New Zealand. That's going to be a tough one for them, I think. Turkey as well. Karagoz out of Turkey. Same thing, just getting into it. You know, it's going to be a tough field for them. One team I forgot was Benoit Schwartz and Yannick Schwaller. You'd have to think of them as a podium contender. So there's probably seven teams, Jimmy, that could get on the podium out of the field. So it's pretty, you know, maybe not quite as deep as the women's, but it's no fun. you've got to play really well from start to finish to be able to, first of all, make the playoffs, but then to get on the podium.
Warren, you got, like Kevin mentioned, New Zealand and maybe Turkey. These teams probably won't do very well at all. Does it still bug you, Warren? Should they be relegated out of the Worlds, or is it good that we have a bunch of teams there, even though you would never bet on some of them?
Well, you're going to open up that topic, are you, Jim?
I like to put you on the spot once in a while.
Yeah. I'm a believer in divisions, and I don't think there should be more than 10 teams in any division, and probably like they do with the European Championships, probably have about three divisions at least, 10 in each one, and two teams go up and two teams go down each year, countries. As soon as you start getting into 12, 13 team rounds, round robins, the length of time required is just too much. And if you take a look at the situation in Sweden, they spent 7 days playing 12 games, and which is a huge, huge grind and an accomplishment. But yet when you go down in the playoffs, the fact that Pets gets put into the playoffs where the team she's got to play in an elimination game is 5 games behind her, all of a sudden that 12 wins doesn't mean that much. So I think they've got to take a look at that whole thing. To have these round robins, I don't think you should have more than 10 countries or 10 teams in it, because beyond that, it just becomes too much, too long, and everybody just gets too tired.
But on the other side of that coin, Dejat Yildiz out of Turkey, they would have never been able to play in the Worlds yet, but they're really good, and they've really improved quickly. And some of these nations that aren't traditional curling nations, I guess the question that's going to be asked right away is, well, how are they supposed to get any good if they're stuck in B or C? So that's kind of probably the reason for the expanded field is to give opportunities to New Zealand, Turkey, etc. And of course the Turkey ladies team, now they almost made the playoffs, and they will make the playoffs fairly soon because the skip is extremely strong.
But I think if you're going to go beyond that 10 teams, and you have to come up with a different format. So as example, Canada has a two pool system. That still gets too long. If they shortened up the playoffs from, what is it, how many games now to a page where you'd have four. But I think that's the issue. It's not how many teams, and we're going to talk in a minute about the Canadian mixed doubles, is up to 32 teams. And look at the Grand Slams. I mean, you can run 16-team playoff in 5 days quite nicely with a different system. And maybe it's time to take a look at a different system if we have to have the need for all these teams in any given competition.
Lots of curling going on. Holy man. So that's what's happening around the curling world. Hot Rock Topics coming up is brought to you by Coyote Tractor. If you have work to do, Coyote has the tractors, UTVs, and ZTRs to do it. We dig dirt. Warren, you're on again. Interesting enough, we had the Women's Worlds ending in Sweden and the Canadian Mixed Doubles that we just spoke about. This led to some problems in the television streaming coverage, which created a good deal of conversation on Facebook. Warren, you're up to speed on all this stuff, Warren. What's the problem?
Well, let's talk about the structure of this event to start with. So playing it in March against the Women's Worlds wasn't a good idea, in my opinion, because it's certainly going to limit the coverage of it, which it did. I'm finding out by our Facebook group that apparently if you go into Curling Canada website and dig it out, you will find that they're going to move this event in 2024 into January, which I think is a really good idea, and it should help provide better coverage of it. 32 teams, I think, is too many, but it's 14 provincial reps along with 18 ranks. So I think they need to take a look at that whole situation. But let's talk about the television versus streaming coverage. So that event was streamed because there wasn't any possibility of their network TSN doing it because they were doing the Women's Worlds. Today is a difficult situation to take an event and go either with strictly linear television or streaming, because you're dealing with a different demographic. The streaming world is younger. The linear television world is older. If you want to captivate both those audiences, you need to be able to find out a way to provide it, I guess, through both mediums. I think if you're going to go strictly streaming, which they did, and a few people are, I think the key thing is don't charge a fee for at least 3 years. And this was a big complaint in our Facebook group, even though it wasn't, in my opinion, a lot. I think initially when you're starting to stream, 50 cents is too much because people have to go through the process of putting a credit card online. They're not, in many cases, if they're older, willing to do that. So I think the key thing is don't charge initially. I would assume if it's going to go into January next year, it'll probably become part of their television schedule with TSN. And so that to some degree should be resolved going forward. But people really like watching mixed doubles. And a lot of the comments I saw on our Facebook group indicated that a lot of frustration because they couldn't access it. And then some of them, you can know they were older. They refused to pay to access it because, well, I'm already paying for cable television. And if I can't get it there, I'm not going to pay more. So I think these are things everybody has to take a look at going forward. As this transition takes place from linear television to streaming, there's going to be a lot of confusion. I think the key thing is, if you're going strictly streaming, don't charge. Kevin, what do you think?
Well, yes, no question about that. But what's happening when it comes to the world championships and curling around the world is incredible increase in interest, like crazy interest from many, many, many countries. So the future of curling is extremely exciting. But you're right, Warren. Right now, we're sort of in a tricky area where young people tend to like to stream stuff, older people like to have cable, and it's sort of a mishmash right now. But that's okay. That'll figure itself out. But the good news is all these countries love curling and they want a way to watch, be it one way or the other or both. Because you got the same problem inside these nations that a lot of people want to stream, a lot of people want to watch linear TV. So the world is becoming extremely popular. So there's probably room for a new group of events. I think that's probably safe to say worldwide. And just because of the incredible interest. And it's just a matter of, to Warren's point, figuring out how do we do that in the best possible manner.
You know, interesting enough, I've been to Sudbury several times over the last few months. And I remember Troy Crowder, who was a great tough guy. His son plays junior hockey, and he flipped on the TV and brought up this junior B game, right, on his laptop, or you know, and then he airplayed it to his television. I said, what's going on here? He said, yeah, there's a company that covers all that. One company that covers all junior B, junior A across the country. So I don't know how they, and they obviously it's streamed, you know. So they hire kids to just, it's only one camera, right? It's one camera shot. But any game that you want to watch, you can watch it on streaming. Now that's hockey, right? There's a ton of it, but it's the way of the world, as Warren's always said, right? That they're going to go to streaming. So that's a wrap, baby, on the show. Good stuff. And congratulations again to Team Switzerland, and thanks for coming on. We'd also like to thank Rod Paulson and his company, In-House Strategies, for all the great work they do on our Facebook page. If you don't belong, check it out, jump in, and join the conversation. And a reminder again to send us an email, because it could get read on the show. As you know, we do mailbag every show. InsideCurling@gmail.com. That's InsideCurling@gmail.com. We're also looking for input from the listeners about our segments. Do you like them or would you like a different one? We do hot rock topics, what's happening around the curling world, mailbag, and a guest segment. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, and possibly we'll maybe listen to you. No. Thanks again, Sports Interaction, Coyote, Boost, and Goldline, who make all of this possible. And thank you, folks, for listening. Kevin, throw your stuff in the washing machine, pack a new bag, you're on your way.
It's in the washing machine right now. I got it in there just before the show.
By the way, I'm worried about the Easter Bunny. It's dropped to minus 10 here. I don't think he may not show up this month.
I have a frozen tail.
I know. Warren, take it easy, man. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. We'll talk to you next time on Inside Curling. See you, Kevin. See you, Warren.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.